welcome everyone to another edition of Renegade Radio. I am your host, Andy Lowe. As always, we are brought to you by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. Each week, we like to visit with thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and business professionals who are getting outside of traditional norms to create success either in business and or their personal lives, as we call it, breaking the rules of conventional thinking. And I feel like we're in for a treat today. Our guest is Gary Patterson. He is the fiscal doctor, and it looks like checkup time. Gary has brought in the stethoscope, the white lab coat, and I feel like we're going to get a complete examination of our finances here today. Gary, tell us a little bit about the fiscal doctor. I mean, what is it? What exactly is it that you do? Help our listeners understand you.
Long ago when I started in there, the logic was, I think when I just graduated from college, I said, how would I look at a business if a business was going to go through a checkup the same kind of way I would do if I went to the doctor? How would I look at that? So I always, from the very first in public accounting, came back and said, this company I'm helping, what are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? How can I make it better? And if I gave them, in essence, a fiscal, finance, accounting, strategy checkup, what would I look at? How would I find some of these blind spots they're missing to make their life a better way to survive?
I mean, and this is essentially, you think of the fiscal, it's a lot like a physical. Things that go wrong with people in their health typically isn't something that that comes out of the blue or something that maybe couldn't have been prevented if they'd simply gotten early warning on it. I mean, is that kind of the same with finances?
It really is. I mean, I found that you can split blind spots into a couple categories. One of them is the thing that you sort of know it's there, but you're afraid to go check, sort of like going to the doctor if you don't like medical things and taking shots. Another one is there's something there, and your people are telling you, but they just can't explain it. They're a salesperson, and you deal with those, but they don't do well talking to engineers, or vice versa. And then the other one is everybody's working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. There's things you just don't see because just the sheer amount of detail you've got, there's no time to go look.
Well, that sounds a lot like the physical idea. People are just too busy to take the time out to go and get it done, but not taking the time out can cost you a tremendous amount of time and or money later.
You know, it really is, because if you address these, the 800-pound gorilla once upon a time was a 20-pound gorilla, and if you address them then, the key is to get time to do this. And these things change so fast. It wasn't that long ago. Think of but Knight Capital last month. And, you know, you're looking at there, and 1 week, Knight Capital is a relatively unknown middle market company outside of its niche. They're working along. There's a computer conversion going on. They keep working. Everybody's happy, busy, but happy. The day before, the world looks good. Someone says, flip the switch, let's go live. And the next day, $400 million loss in 1 hour, and all of a sudden these people who were there are worried, do I have a job? Will the company survive? What happens to the vendors? What happens to the customers? 1 hour made the difference because someone ignored a blind spot, and we don't even know for sure what the blind spot is. I mean, right now the comment would probably be, did they test enough before they went live? What caused a $400 million loss that took the weekend before the company survived? But if you were a shareholder in that company, two-thirds of the value of your stock disintegrated in 1 hour. And who knows how many people are going to lose their job from that because it's still playing out.
Yeah, very tough to watch something like that go down. Well, Gary, thinking back to a small business or a medium-sized business and not necessarily a large corporate entity like that, many of us have our own accountants, our own CPAs. How is what you do as a fiscal doctor different than something I would ask or expect my CPA or accountant to already do for me?
Well, several things. The first of which, you think back a few years ago, and your accountant used to be able to be an advocate. They could tell you things that they thought would work better. They could make recommendations and suggestions. They can't do that anymore. They've now been forced into a position. They're really a scorekeeper. How well did you do after the fact? those management letters that they used to give you on these things that said, here's how to make more money, here's how to take less risk. They're not they basically either aren't allowed to do that, or the new norm is a letter that says, we checked on the internal controls, we looked around a little, we didn't look around a lot, didn't find anything horrible, but don't think there isn't something horrible there because it could be there and we missed it. That's what you're getting, whereas 10 years ago you would have gotten suggestions. What I do that's different, I go in there, I'm your advocate. I am looking for three things that one of my first mentors told me to do. How can I help you increase revenues? How can I help you keep more money in your pocket at the end of the day? And if I do number one and two, you should be able to run your business and life with less stress. To the extent that I do those three things, I look at it completely different than the accountant does. I look for soft and squishy assets. I don't care what GAAP is. Speed, not perfection. The accountants, unfortunately, have to work until they get the numbers perfect per GAAP. And the other issue is just this plain fact that because I do nothing but that, basically, I've gotten extremely good for companies, as you say, of all sizes, because I've helped companies that didn't even have a product up to middle market and even the Fortune 500.
Well, you mentioned a lot of things about helping improve my business, and many business owners, they hear that type of thing all the time. People say, I can help you increase revenues or save more money or what have you. So we begin to look at the qualifications behind that and the person who's telling us they can do those things. And I thought it was interesting, as you were telling me before the show, you didn't really get your experience and all the knowledge necessarily from your CPA or your MBA, but you said it was more about what happened in seventh grade, some lessons you learned there. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the comment there is, think back to junior high. Was there ever a bully in your school? There was a situation where we had a bully. The bully comes in there, they're picking on me, et cetera, and one day, I've had enough. Going to fight back, and I beat the bully. Now, that sounds good. But what happens if that bully has two older, bigger, meaner brothers? I found out that the next day. So that was... That was my first approach to enterprise risk management.
Fair enough. I think we've probably all in our business encountered that as well. So coming back to the idea of thinking differently and being unique, obviously you've got to open up someone's mindset to thinking differently in their business. What are some of the questions that you come in and ask to really fuel the expansion of people's thinking?
Well, one of them, I think you're going to like this one. It's probably one you use also. I mean, you've got to regularly come back and say, on our product or service, on this one, why should our target company buy from us rather than the competition? And if your audience can't answer that to the affirmative, you got a problem. And this changes. You can't sleep on your laurels. The best analogy, I think, of that one is, go back 5 years, 6 years ago, and who was this strange idea of a phone coming out of Apple? I mean, everybody wanted a Nokia or a Motorola. That's probably what you and I both had. And then all of a sudden, in terms of having the best product for the customer, how many Nokia and Motorola phones have you seen lately? I mean, Apple, on these things, tried a couple of things. Everybody wants a smartphone. And an awful lot of us prefer either the iPhone or, something like that, maybe from Samsung. Nokia and Motorola are way in the dust. Things change fast.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, once upon a time, I can remember thinking of Apple as not a very good computing platform. It was not something that you wanted to own. It was kind of like, well, you might as well, buy a Commodore 64. I think I just dated myself.
I think I had one of those also, or I know I had the little Apple, the earlier one, what was it, 64K of memory? Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's not like that was 100 years ago, although to some of the younger audience, they'll say, what is that? But that shows you how fast thing changes. So the answer really on that, you mentioned that computer, it wasn't that long ago that the answer was, we are the best they can buy and the best they can get. There is no competition, but it changes.
Yeah, things are changing rapidly these days as well. I mean, how do you help a company really think through an ever-changing environment, especially with so many variables?
a lot of that one is, you know, the mixture of art and science. I've got some key questions I use. We mentioned one of them. But part of it is, I mentioned the three areas of blind spots. One of them is the people inside of a company are really hungry to tell someone about an improvement. But no one will listen, they don't think. Or the biggest thing I'm seeing right now is I will be the advocate and the scapegoat. And let me clarify that because I think it's key. Right now, the people who in the past would have told you about a problem don't do it anymore. Now, why is that? Because a couple of things. One, they want to pick their battles. Again, they've seen too many cases, far too many companies. They are killing the messenger. Secondly, the idea is if there's a problem over there, it's like, well, you've evidently got extra time. You go fix it. Or, why didn't you fix it? Why did you tell me? And then if you come back and say that something is a problem, you think, and you say Joe or Susan is, you know, in their area this is happening, and you're wrong, you've just made an enemy. You really need the outside advocate or scapegoat to come in to say the things that your people are afraid to say. Group one. Group two, they've said it, but people don't understand it. And group three, I think I gave the example we were talking about earlier about the sand asset, the difference between why me and an accounting firm. I mean, the story on that one was, and the numbers are small because the company was in the, you know, $20, $30 million range. I go in there and I'm asking the questions with the senior people in the middle market. And we talk about something. The guy says, yeah, you know, I'm a little concerned about the sand. And I'm thinking, let's see. You have a construction group. Logically, you should have sand. I said, well, can you help me? I don't think I understand yet. And he said, well, it's like this. We've got there's $250,000 worth of sand on the books, and I really didn't worry about it so long as it didn't matter. But now that someone's talking about the board wants me to be responsible for the assets and the equity I have, I don't want to be responsible for the sand. I said, okay, still don't understand. He said, well, you see, it's like this. A couple years ago, they had some sand. They capitalized at the end of the year. And it's out there in the yard somewhere. But after the grass grew up, we're not sure we could find it anymore. Now, because that sand is there, an accountant would look at that and they'd say, you got $250,000, $500,000 worth of sand. That's okay. You know, we might say, you know, I wondered about it a little, but tell me you're going to use it. I looked at that and say, well, that's a soft asset or a squishy liability. And if you economically want to make money at this company, you better use it, take the loss, or move on because, you know, that is not a good precedent to do. And if you've got that kind of a squishy asset, what else haven't you been willing to look up and face? What other can have you kicked down the road that you need an outsider like myself to come in and basically, extremely quickly, make a short prioritized list? Not this 282-page book that you get from a major consulting firm. A short, simple list of 10 items, prioritized opportunities that you better resource change, issues you should address while it's still a 20-pound gorilla, and maybe one of those 800-pound dead rats that could be huge. You don't want to be the next Knight Capital losing 2/3 of the value of your company in 1 hour, whether you are a $2 million company or a $1 billion company.
Well, you talk about kicking the can down the road, and some of that is just, I think, delusion of self, right? I mean, we start lying to ourselves to the point that we end up believing it. How do you help companies really overcome that hurdle so that they, because I assume transparency is a hugely important piece. If you're going to have somebody like yourself come in and we're going to move things in the right direction, how do you get people to open up and really be honest with themselves and with you?
You know, the interesting thing is, as I say, I've only been part of groups where we found fraud 1.5 times, embarrassment a lot. Your people on these companies want to correct these things. They just don't want to be the messenger who gets shot or the person that says, add this to your workload. When I come in there and ask these questions, I've been the CFO, CEO, CTO, COO, EIO, whatever, all the thingies. So I know when they're saying something that I need to dig a little deeper, like on the sand, and they may have told the boss or the boss's boss, but they don't know how to talk at board level so their concerns get addressed. And I can go in there in days, not weeks or months, can make that list. It's incredible.
Well, I know you have a philosophy similar to Jim Collins, where he talks about in order to have a successful business, you got to have the right people on the bus and in the right seats. Not so much about the destination to begin with, but right people on the bus and in the right place. How does that apply in the fiscal checkup?
On these things with it, it's the quality of the people that are there. Have you been training your people? If you're now let's say you're a $100 million company, and several of these employees are the same people who were there when you were a $50,000 company, you probably got the wrong people on the bus, either in accounting, finance, marketing. I can think of one situation of a high-growth company, and the woman we had was great when this was about a $100,000 company. It had grown. She now was still handling international, and it was a disaster happening periodically on these things. Everyone knew that she could not do these things right, and yet, because she had been there from day one, she had the ear of the president, and anybody who said anything about Mrs. M on these things put themselves at serious risk. She was the wrong person on the bus. Matter of fact, what should have been done is someone, the owner should have said, you've done a great job. Here's a $250,000. You were there for me all along the way. What she would have loved to have done would have had a little restaurant to go back, have her own business. Again, her own business could have been a couple hundred thousand of revenue with a nice lifestyle business. She would have been much happier there than in a situation she knew she was in over her head. But it's awful hard to come back and admit that you haven't been able to keep up and that you've really reached, you know, with the, what is it, Peter's principle, that, you know, you've been promoted above your competency level. Perfect example.
Where do you think the line is between business and people? I mean, obviously, as a business owner, it's important to be able to make business decisions, but when I say that word, I start thinking about the bean counters, that there's no human side to it. But going completely the other way, we see a lot of business owners that become very emotional in their business, and everything is kind of a heart decision, which may not be the best business decision. I mean, where's the line in that, and how do you coach and advise clients in that arena?
Let me give you one more story that I see far too often, two stories. One of them is this issue of inventory, and because I was talking to someone just earlier this week, and the issue is the person who gets so emotional, this owner, a lot of times what they'll do is keep inventory on hand. They won't sell it. And what happens when you talk to the people in the warehouse, they'll say, you know, Joe, I tell you, Joe loves this stuff with it. The stuff over there that's got dust and cobwebs on it, it's been here for now 5 years. Nobody's going to buy it. We've got more than when we need, but Joe loves that product. Matter of fact, he knows it so well, he has named each one of them. It's sort of like they're almost his kids. That's not an isolated case. You come back. So the problem in that case really is the owner. Now, that same person is the same kind of person that will be loyal to Mrs. M, even though on this thing with it, they are detrimentally affecting the company. The question you've got to be willing to do is do the right thing, because neither they nor you are benefiting from having people untrained, ill-prepared, and in the wrong place. Now, my other projection I'm going to say right now for your people who are listening is, I hate to tell you, but what I'm reading and seeing is the very best people you have, the people who are doing a good job and who are in the right seat on that bus, they are so anxious to jump for anything else because they've been overworked, underappreciated, et cetera, et cetera. The grass doesn't even have to look green on the other side on these things with it, because they are so ready to move that the next concern that people are already pointing out is the human capital issue, and are you going to have the people you need to take care of growth opportunities? Because if you lose certain key people, and I would challenge the audience, who are the two or three people in your company or division that you need to hold on to most? Identify them. Put, you know, just visually think of those three people. How do you know they're going to stay? If you've got any doubt at all, why don't you do something in some way, give them some training, just say, hey, you're doing a nice job. But address the blind spot that the chances are that if you come back a year from now and listen to this show again, you're going to have lost one of your two or three best people. The marginal people in the wrong seat on the bus, they're going to stay. They're afraid to go anywhere else.
Well, when you think about the people, maybe you can give us two or three tips here of what should leadership be doing within the organization to hang on to the right people and empower them so that you really cut down on the fiscal problems between checkups.
Well, you know, and this is a really interesting balance. I think you've had that on some of your other shows. Where do you express appreciation by saying good work, et cetera, et cetera? Where do you back that up with money? And where do you say, well, if you just give everybody more money, all you're going to do is have unhappy people who are better paid? Really, that's the kind of issue where you need a suggestion being an HR person who is an excellent person on incentives and comps to bridge that. And usually what I do to look at that when I've been with groups, we look at the idea of overall, is your strategy that you're going to pay your people in the top quarter, bottom quarter, median? What are you going to do? And, you know the risk you're taking when you balance the incentives and the opportunities you give people with the issue of, are you getting things out of line? If your comment is, we always pay our people well, and you think you're in the top quartile, and yet you've got software people or something, and things have changed. Those top quartiles are now the third quartile. That's when you start losing people. So you really need to have, in essence, an incentive work checkout along the way, too.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some studies on that in the past. Money is a motivator to a certain point and for certain tasks, but oftentimes, depending on the task, people aren't looking for financial incentive. They're looking for other things to actually incentivize them. Is that something that, through this fiscal checkup process, you can help employers identify?
I do less of that. I mean, my core strengths are what fiscal would sound like: accounting, finance, systems, and strategy. I was really pleased. I've noticed that if you go out on LinkedIn, you've noticed the new in thing seems to be that people who know you will comment on some of the areas of expertise that you have said, I'm good at on these things. But it seems to be the new thing as opposed to a testimonial. And in the last 10 days, I've had six or seven people who say, we really, really think high of Gary as for strategic planning. They haven't said finance, accounting, or the other issues. They have looked at me as someone who helps the people they've seen me work on in common strategically do this. It's got to be speed, success, not perfection, and it's got to be a strategic prioritization, because nobody has time to do something twice.
Well, you talk about strategy, and oftentimes trying to have a strategy without proper information can be difficult. And when you look at business owners that you have bumped into out there, do you find that in large they seem to know their numbers and are on top of their business and understand how it works? Or do you find that a lot of them have no idea what the numbers are in their business and they're just doing what they know how to do from a technical standpoint to provide the service or the product?
Well, the easy answer is going to be yes. In other words, all of the above. But let me give you a suggestion. I mean, saying that it's all over the board. The key thing that I've done a lot that was really taught to me when I went in, of all things, the fast food business. I've been there from hamburgers to high-end steel to the internet. And the comment was a flash report of the key 5 to 7 metrics that run the business. And that sounds so simple. Why doesn't everyone do it? Well, the reason they don't do it is because it is hard to decide that. I mean, if you look at a company, let's talk manufacturing, where you actually see something, a physical product, because that's a heavy emphasis here in the Atlanta area. You go out to the warehouse, they logically have something that talks about, you know, how much do we ship today? How many days has it been since someone got hurt? You go over to the sales department, they'll say, well, how many new customers we've gotten, et cetera. Everyone will look at certain things they want to track, sometimes by hand. Your issue that says, what do you do when the information isn't there? The problem is, how do you roll that up from the top down? Because if the only way you look at that and every department gets 5 to 7 metrics, you have 200-300 metrics at the top if you've got a big company. But yet if you come back and say, what are the 5 things that matter? And I've seen some companies where the CEO says, forget this 5 things. Our number one mission is beat Microsoft. Our number one issue is safety. And we are going to drill that until we get it down perfectly. And anybody you talk to, from the receptionist to a board of director member, is going to say, this is the primary thing we monitor. When you do that and run the business and know where the business comes from and what it takes to run the business, somehow the numbers you need show up, sometimes the information is there, and sometimes you do the right things. But I've helped companies up to $1 billion, and they could not come up with those 5 to 7 metrics.
Understood. So take us a little deeper into the process. If someone were to come on board and say, yes, I need a fiscal checkup, what's the process like? What do we go through, and how do I get prepared for it?
On these things with it, again, it's going to be speed. I've done some of these. We're going to talk. The first item is I'm going to have a discussion with you, and you and I are going to decide what you like and what are the values you can get. Because if I don't feel comfortable that you're going to get great value out of this, truthfully, I am. I'm going to say thank you, but why don't you just talk to the regular CPA firm or someone who does certain work? Assuming that we say it does make sense, I ask initially for 12 items. I ask your people to prepare as much of that as they can before I get there. When I get there, I follow up on those with questions. I look at, again, financial, accounting, and systems information. And in the course of days, I come up with your people with 5 to 10 key issues that I prioritize, and I give you 2 sheets of paper. And I say, do any of the one thing on those 2 sheets of paper, and you are going to get great value. You'll get even more value if you do one of the things that's up at the top. But if you don't want to do my number 1, 2, or 3, even number 4 will make you better off than you were.
So if someone out there listening is thinking, you know, maybe I need a fiscal checkup for my business, how would they go about reaching out to you and making an appointment or getting these steps in line?
The best way would be if you'll just go to my website, which is fiscaldoctor.com, so www.fiscaldoctor.com, and you can pick up one thing you might like. I did an extract from my first book, which is 5 of the most common risks or blind spots that I find. You can look at that one and just send me an email. The phone number's there. You know, just call me. Be glad to talk to you over the phone, have coffee with you, et cetera.
Well, great. Well, Gary, thank you so much for coming on today, and appreciate you sharing with our listeners some information that I think they'll find valuable. And for those of you listening, I hope you dig into your numbers. It's a critical and important piece of your business. In fact, Gary said to me earlier before the show, he said, knowing your numbers is a key to greater profits inside of your business. So if you're not sure what they are, get a checkup. Find out where you are, and you'll be able to make better business decisions going forward. As always, I am your host, Andy Lowe. This has been Renegade Radio. We hope you'll tune in each and every week as we meet with business owners and successful professionals to find out what they are doing different to create success inside of their business and personal lives by getting outside of traditional norms. Remember that opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.